Anatomy. I am your host, Charlie DeClean. I'm a physical therapist at Bell & Health Titletown Sports Medicine Orthopedics, a stone's throw away from iconic Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. On today's episode, we have an interview with Mackenzie August. Mackenzie is the owner and founder of MacRock Athletic Development Center here in Green Bay. MacRock is a soccer training facility that focuses on developing the entire athlete, including the mental along with the physical development. Mackenzie was a D1 soccer athlete at the University of Arizona and then went on to play professionally in Chicago and Colorado. Mackenzie shares her story of how her dream of really owning her own athletic development company came to fruition and shares her passions about training the entire athlete, not just the sport of soccer. So stretch out, warm up, and get ready. This is Players Anatomy. First up, we have news of the day. This past Monday night, Sterling Shepard, he is a wide receiver for the New York Giants, has reportedly possibly torn his ACL. What we know by the time I am taping this right now is that he had a non-contact injury. And really, the whole point of bringing this up is it seemed to cause a absolute trending nightmare on really social media platforms about turf and this big outcry of we have to get back to all grass. And the only thing, and while I don't disagree, I do think that there's a lot of turf that has created more traction. Cleats sink into it better than they sink into grass, and it's created more torque that the athlete can create. The game gets played faster, and I don't disagree with any of those things. But this was a really interesting case, and that's the reason why I'm bringing it up. If you saw the video, Sterling Shepard is simply running a route, and he really, if I'm being honest, doesn't even look like he plants. It almost looks like he was starting to slow down, and all of a sudden you just see him pop up, you know, grabs his knee. Clearly something is not right. Again, I really have a hard time in this situation simply blaming the turf unless there was a seam there, if there was a divot there, which it, if I'm being honest, it does not appear to do that. But I think it brings on a bigger discussion is really playing surfaces. You know, if you go back to one of the first podcasts we did with Dr. Mackenzie, we talked about, you know, the prevalence of ACL tears and what could all be going into it. And one of the things that comes up often is playing surfaces. You know, we look at, for basketball, the evolution of the floors are better, shoes are tackier and better. And in football, we look at cleats are better. You know, football, soccer, you know, lacrosse, cleats are better. And there is no doubt that there is the better ability for the cleat to grab in turf, where in standard grass, a lot of times the foot will actually slide. You know, you'll kick up dirt and slide, which, if I'm being honest, also can cause some injuries, but definitely not as much torque that can be added. So I know social media can be a dark hole that you can go down. In this case, though, I don't really agree with the absolute terror people are going on with that this was all because of the turf. While I do agree that I do love sports on natural grass, I think it's easier on the joints. I think we see less other things, even less infection, because obviously it's dirt and it's not things that are just staying on there. In this case, I'm not totally sold that would happen, but it definitely brings up this idea of, you know, the surfaces we play on. So hopefully Sterling, wish him nothing but the best in his recovery. But it'll be interesting to see if more of this story develops with the turf in this case. For today's interview, we welcome Mackenzie August. As I mentioned before, Mackenzie is the owner of MacRock Athletic Development Center. Mackenzie played D1 soccer at the University of Arizona while getting a degree in sociology and sports management. Mackenzie went on to play professionally for the Chicago Red Stars and the Colorado Storm. Mackenzie founded MacRock back in about 2015 and really following her passion of training young athletes. Mackenzie has developed a program that treats the entire athlete, including the mental as well as the physical aspects of development. Mackenzie utilizes multiple pieces of technology in her facility for player development, including a synaptic sensory training piece of equipment that specifically targets the mental side of athletics. Really interesting interview. I really enjoyed talking with her. I think we could have sat and talked for hours, and we'll probably at some point have to have her back on. I just really like her approach to training, and I think a bunch of different discussions came up with the world of club sports and youth sports in general, and I really appreciated her thoughts on it. So I hope you enjoy this interview. Here is Mackenzie August. All right, Mackenzie, thank you for joining us. Give our listeners a little background. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Chicago, suburbs of Chicago, Libertyville, Illinois. I went to Libertyville High School. I lived there until I went off to college, and I played soccer all of my life, along with cross country, volleyball, basketball, track, cheerleading, and yeah, I did it all.
Did a little everything.
Yeah.
So when did you start get really, really serious about soccer specifically?
I was the best at soccer, and I realized that. So my freshman year of high school, I decided to dedicate my time to soccer and cross country specifically. I wanted to continue with track, but track was at the same time as soccer season in high school. So that's why I kind of countered it with cross country in the fall and then soccer in the spring.
So then, and I know I kind of alluded to this a little bit in the intro, but one of the hardest things is this idea of club and high school. Did you play both club soccer and high school soccer?
Yes, I did. So our club was in the fall and then high school was in the spring. So I did cross country and club soccer at the same time because cross country was through high school. And then during the spring, I just played high school soccer.
So, and I know you and I talked offline, but obviously the listener didn't hear that. Mm-hmm. So when did you start formally getting recruiting letters for playing soccer? And then when did you finally make your decision and where did you end up?
I would say it's hard for me to remember because like I said earlier, my journey was kind of different. I would say I started getting letters probably like sophomore year, but I just really like turned them down. Like I knew at that point, at least my mentality wasn't looking much beyond just that year. So once like junior year came along and I kept getting them, you know, my parents would pass them along. And I think at that point I just made the decision that I was done playing soccer after high school and I didn't want to play collegiately. So I declined every letter. And then my senior year, I played high school season in the spring, and I had picked where I was going to go to college, which was the University of Arizona, around like January of my senior year. Played high school soccer, and then my club coach from the fall, who was really the sole reason why I am where I am today, because I don't think I would be where I am unless I ended up actually playing college soccer, which I did. I went off to Arizona, University of Arizona in Tucson, not ASU. I like to make that clear. She asked me just like, hey, pick your school. Let me know where you go. She got in contact with the coach, asked me to go down for a walk-on tryout in June after graduation. I went down there, kind of got to meet my roommate who also was in the same position I was and decided to try to walk on. And I had like the best tryout of my life because I didn't care. I didn't
put any pressure on yourself.
Like I actually didn't expect to make it. I didn't really want to make it at that point. And then in the midst of tryouts, I was like, wow, I actually can do this. Like I'm holding my own, which my mentality, I think a part of the reason why I didn't want to play college soccer was I had this disbelief in myself. And I don't think that didn't come from anywhere but myself, really. And then I walked out of tryouts and I got a call a day later that I needed to be down there by like July 4th, which was like 2 weeks away. And so I packed up my stuff.
Summer I gone. Left.
Yeah. And summer was gone and we started preseason and that was a lot. Yeah. Especially not, when I decided that I was going to make the trip down to try out my club coach, we started training hardcore from like probably May. You know, once high school season was over until the day that I left. So I was prepped to an extent, but if I was prepping appropriately over the years, mentally and physically, I think things would have gone differently.
So I want to go back because you said it in two different ways of I didn't want to, I was done.
Yeah.
Was there any part of you playing both and being a multi-sport athlete and just the commitment level? Now, I'm much older than you. Youth sports looked very different back then. Mm-hmm. I had a quarter of the opportunities that even you had. And the kids today have twice as many opportunities that you had 10 years ago, right?
Yep.
Was there any burnout? Was there any of you that wanted to be done with soccer because you felt you had played too much? Or was it purely more of this disbelief of what your talent really actually was or could be?
I think it was probably a mix. I don't want to say I ever got burnt out because I love the sport so much. I know, like, there's those days where you just don't want to go to practice, and that's going to happen to any athlete, right, even if you're bound to go pro. Like, and that's okay. That there's going to be days you just don't want to be there. But I think it was just a mix of my social life and what all my friends were doing, which I think still stands in a lot of high schoolers' life these days.
Yeah,
they
100%.
They look at like what their friends that don't play sports do outside of school. So I think there was a mix of that. There was an idea of just like, you know, what college really is. And my sister was in college at that point. She didn't play college soccer. She actually had torn her ACL, so she was done after senior year. And I, you know, saw what her lifestyle was. So there was a mix of both. I don't think I realized that it was a bit of the disbelief that I couldn't play until I was put in the position and up against collegiate athletes where I was like, I really didn't think I could do this. And then when I realized at that moment that I could, I was like, well, shoot. Like, did I mean, it all happens for a reason, right? Yeah. But like all of the letters and the emails and the coaches that reached out that I declined, like I actually still to this day ask myself this because my journey was so different. Like, where would I have been if I would have put more focus? But my parents, you know, they really didn't pressure us. They wanted us to go to school, Like, if we wanted to play, then great. If we didn't, then that's fine. But they didn't expect us to play. So I didn't really have a lot of pressure from them, which was a blessing, honestly, because a lot of the girls that I played with, you know, they were like forced, like their parents paid.
This was the expectation.
Yeah, paid for them to play at the level that they did through high school so that they could get a full ride. And I didn't have that. And I find myself very blessed to be in that position because I think if I would have had that pressure, it would have driven me in a completely different route.
Asked the question the way I did is exactly for that reason. I think one of the things, there's a lot of studies that come out about specializing in sports. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I've seen it with some friends and family, of losing the passion and love for the sport because it becomes a job and no longer something that you just love doing.
Yeah.
You know, I look back and I'm blessed to not have had cell phones when I was in high school, not dealing with social media when I was a kid. So many things I'm happy that I got to. But at the same time, every opportunity that I got to play a game or go to practice, because it wasn't what it is today, it was exciting. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, this is going to be great. And now honest to God, if you want to do something 7 days a week, you could.
Yep.
Which is crazy,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So let's use this as our transition. So, and thank you for giving us some background, and I hope this helps the listener kind of know a little bit more your story of you did do this. You did have to do, and now what you're doing for with your life, with your company, and the mission of your company is really to help people navigate everything you just said.
Yep.
Literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two kids in high school. I have a son who loves soccer. It's his passion. And I am trying to ride that line that your parents did of sports can teach us so many life lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So I want him to get the life lessons out of sports. Yet it's not only about so that you can get a scholarship in college.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, it's a failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a hard line to ride.
Yes.
And I'd love to interview your parents of how they did it, because clearly they did it right. So let's start with this of, when did you just start thinking that you could create a company like you did in MacRock? When did that journey start begin of like, I think I have an idea? And then give our listener a little background of what is you're actually doing? What is your company?
Yeah, so I knew deep down, my parents are both business owners. So for me, like once I got towards the end of my college career, I was like, I don't think I can work for somebody. but I was going to school. I graduated with a sociology and sports management degree. So I thought I wanted to be in like sports operations. So I had a few internships in that realm, and I figured out that I didn't want to do that. So I played soccer 2 years out of college. I played semi-pro for the Chicago Red Stars reserve team, and then I played semi-pro for a team in Colorado. So I moved to Colorado for a summer. And then my husband brought me to Green Bay, and when I moved up here, a lot because I didn't really get, have a job out of college because I just decided I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I played soccer. To make extra money, I trained people on the side. So whatever, wherever we were, when I was back in Chicago, I knew a lot of people. So that's when I, where I filled those gaps. But in Colorado, I didn't know anybody. So the team really had set us up with, like, the girls are offering additional training. This is where you can sign up. So that's where it kind of started. And then growing up, I went, I did additional training, whether it was athletic training or soccer specific training. So when I left Colorado and moved to Green Bay, I actually had a teaching job, but I also coached through DePere Select, where the U11 teams. And that's where it really started, is I would train a lot of those girls on the side too. And then I started building a clientele base of a lot of players from all over. So all different clubs. And I realized it was a huge niche, like where nobody really did it in Green Bay at that point. There was a few, but especially from the female standpoint, there weren't really many one-on-one individual coaches for, not for females, but that were females.
Sure.
And I was like, wow, this is a niche. And there's so much talent in Green Bay, but it's not touched upon. Like these, you know, like people just don't know that they can do this, that they can add the additional piece in their life. And if they do, what it could do for their player development. So I decided to, at that point, in the midst of teaching at the school that I was teaching at, also like on the side as like a side hustle, start to build MacRoc. And I was doing it out of my, the back of my car. I would travel like from, like, honestly, all the way north of Green Bay down to like Appleton and just get out on fields with kids. The clientele base just really grew through word of mouth, honestly. I started training a lot more boys at that point. And then I stopped coaching locally for the club system because I didn't want there to be any conflict of interest, because I was training people from all different clubs. No, I never recruited kids to the specific club I was coaching at, but I just didn't want there. I knew from my past and knowing what my parents went through and just the politics of all sports that this could go downhill quickly if I sure. kept myself coaching the game and one-on-one. And not that it's wrong that coaches still do that, but for me it was just like I needed to decide.
Yeah.
So I decided to go with the niche that I created, and then I stopped I stopped teaching. And I, in 2017, I rented my first indoor space because obviously majority of the year in Green Bay, you can't train outside.
Nope.
So I was like, well, where am I going to do this? And then I started building up more and more clientele, and I didn't have the space to do it. So I rented my own indoor space in 2017, laid some turf. And then from there, it just kind of blew up. I quickly realized that in time, I wouldn't want MacRoc to dwindle when I decided to step out a little bit more, because I eventually wanted to have a family. And that's when I started transitioning the brand of it into the equipment-based training. And then also obviously staffing with reputable coaches that could carry on my philosophy that I started with. Right. Well, so that's kind of where it all, how it all came about. Now we're in like a 8,000 square foot building, and we have five different training areas that focus on all different areas of player development. We work really strongly on the physical standpoint, but also the mental side of things. And like you said, like we focus on everything from athletic development, just because it's important to remember that athletes figure out who they are aside from being an athlete, because at some point, even if they are bound to go pro and they go pro, it's going to end one day. And these athletes need to realize that they have worth outside of their sport.
It's not who they are.
Yeah, exactly. So we try and really implement that into the picture rather than just like, you know, push them in training. So sometimes the conversation is more beneficial than the drill. So that's one thing that we've really, over the past couple of years, have tried to focus on, as well as obviously making the atmosphere of training exciting and fun and competitive, whether it's them in themselves or with other players.
So you and I talked about this a little bit before we started recording. You know, the amount of games that are played in youth sports, mm-hmm. in my personal opinion, at times is out of control. And mm-hmm. If I'm being honest, there's no one sport to pick on. Mm-hmm. It's all of them. Mm-mm. It's slowly become all of them.
Yeah.
And I think there's this misconception, especially with parents, mm-hmm. that, and I've said this in a couple different ways on multiple of our podcasts, of if I would have had these opportunities, if my parents would have been able to give me these opportunities, mm-hmm. maybe I could have something better more.
Yep.
It's coming from a place mm-hmm. that they love their kids and they want nothing but the best for the kids. So they think I need to give them every opportunity possible mm-hmm. because I wish somebody would have done that for me.
Yep.
And there's too many opportunities. Yes. And then they don't know what to do. But yet also there's misconception of the only way to get better is games.
Yep.
Is games, games, games. And it drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to only do skill based, whether it be physical and mental, and not do like, yeah, and then we'll play 10 games a week? Why did you make that decision?
Pretty much for the reason what you just said. It's just when I started the one-on-one training up here, it was like I saw that mentality from parents that, well, why would I do this? Like, what if, like, why wouldn't I just have my kids play games? And that's when I was like, well, let's just wait and see. So let's put your kids in additional training and then see how they play in games too, and then come back and let's talk and let's see the transition that you saw. And for me, I personally liked the relationship building with the parents and the players, and I think that ultimately, like I just said, the player would see a crazy transition when they allowed themselves those couple hours a week or however much they trained to themselves and with somebody that 100% of their time was put into that athlete, and how that was brought to the field. And, you know, it is like, it's hard because there are a lot of games played too often for these youth athletes, but that's out of my control, honestly. But it is a matter of making sure, you know, if these athletes are being forced in a way because the seasons are short to play X amount of games a week, you can't just allow them to go sit on the couch in between. You have to react to that and be smart and make sure that they're getting the proper recovery and make sure that along with playing X amount of games that they're not just recovering, but they're also getting the individual work on the ball. And that is whether it's with their teams or in a one-on-one atmosphere. And I always tell people, like, it doesn't have to be MacRock, but it has to be somewhere. Like we want to be that niche for you, but if we're not, go find it somewhere, because if you are that dedicated and you're going to play that many games a week, you need to make sure that you're putting in the extra that many times a week. So, you know, it's important to think about that for the sake of the physical health of your athlete, the mental health of your athlete, and then just overall, you know, like we've talked about, injury prevention and making sure that they're not overdoing it for many, many reasons.
Right. And we have, and I know we're still new in our partnership between Bellin and MacRock, mm-hmm. but we're very, very picky. Mm-hmm. You know, we could simply take the model of let's throw money at a whole bunch of private companies who have athletes and just that'll give us business. Mm-hmm. We're really, really picky. And one of the things that really, really intrigued us about your business model is the idea that you're treating all aspects of the athlete. Mm-hmm. And it just completely fell in line with what our mission is, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. we are not just, in my world, rehabbing. I'm not just physically rehabbing somebody. Mm-hmm. There are so many conversations about mental, physical, sleep, everything, mm-hmm. treating mm-hmm. the entire athlete. Can you just spend even just a minute, just take a deeper dive of, because you said that about the conversations, the mm-hmm. the mental side, you're more than just an athlete. Mm-hmm. Touch on a little bit of like, what are kind of the pillars of what you do that allow you then to treat the whole athlete?
So when we bring in a new family, we don't just bring in the athlete, we bring in the family and we give them a tour of the facility, an explanation of what each area is and why we are introducing each area into a player development, into a player's development. And then from there, we sit the athlete down and have them answer a questionnaire, just figuring out why they want to train, what they want to train. And at this point, we're kind of away talking to the parent, let the athlete just like speak to us on a piece of paper. So then we can look back on it so that when we initiate their training, we have the right, we can navigate it properly. That's going to suit them best. And then from there, we kind of, you know, it depends on what age they start at. It's always different. I always say, like, every athlete is like a science, because you get the athletes that are really outgoing. You get the athletes that are really quiet. You get the athletes that are really quiet. Sometimes you're like, do they even want to be here? So you kind of have to, like, work through that and get them to open up more, because then ultimately at that point, like, you realize their training transforms when you can get them to just to be a little bit more open. When you work with the athletes that are ultimately, like, initially engaging or engaging and very outgoing, that is like, okay, now we need to kind of almost not bring that down a notch, but let's hone in on, like, how can we make this more specific in areas? Like, you're super excited about everything, but we want you to understand the little nits and pieces that we need to focus on in order to, like, ultimately even get you further excited about your player development, because when you can put more focus on those specific areas, you're going to see yourself excel even more. So then with that, we guide them through, like, what studios in the facility, which, like, this is why we give a demo session to each family, because you can't just, like, and even speaking of it right now, like, hard. Anybody that's interested needs to come into the facility, mm-hmm. just kind of like how you guys say, like, you've got to get them into Ballin to see really what we offer, because it's not just a ball on the turf. It's a ball with a ball distributor that's going to shoot the ball out at you, that's going to teach you how to take your touch. It's a precision session that is a light-up goal, pretty much, that makes you focus on the accuracy of your shot and the structure of your shot. There's the technical zone that allows you to work on vision and awareness, passing accuracy, passing precision, and then there's the synaptic sensory station that makes you focus on all brain training. So with that, like, we figure out, while getting to know the athlete and where they're at through the first couple of sessions and that questionnaire that they answered, which is the best route to guide them in regards to scheduling and getting getting them set up with the best training regime possible to benefit their player development. So it's really just a matter of just getting to know the athlete and then letting them, like, steer the wheel in training, but also making sure that the questions are asked. Like, you don't want them to get stagnant. You don't just want them to go every week like this, because that's when things start to get not boring, but too normal for them. And you always want to keep it, like, I've learned, like, and that's one of the reasons why I've built the brand off of this equipment now, is because you need to keep it exciting, because that's kind of when the burnout happens, is when that excitement goes away and they're doing it too much. So if they're gonna come in 3 times a week, that's awesome, but how can we make it different each time they
every
come
single
in
time.
And that's what the facility and what we have in it has allowed our athletes to ideally keep themselves engaged and excited about what's to come each time they come in MacRock. And then ultimately they see those habits get pulled onto the field, and then everyone's happy, right? Because everything's becoming better and better and better.
That's fantastic. The only thing then I know I forgot to ask you that would lead up to that is, you kind of alluded to it, of when you start is kind of a science, when it's important, but when do you feel are kind of like the best windows of time for people to actually start engaging in this type of training?
Well, we have a little kickers class that is 3 to 6 year olds. So some of our, like, 7, 8, 9 year olds are one-on-one training. Some aren't. I remember one of the things that was always, like, spoken about when I was growing up and just through my coaching career is that they're too young to be doing that already. And right. I find I will just, like, stand strong in my belief that that should just never be said. If you ask, like, any pro athlete or the top soccer players in the world, ask them when they started. It's just a matter of the approach. Like, you don't want to run down a 3-year-old. Like, it's about having fun. If they're picking grass, they're picking grass. Well, like, then so be it. But, like, you know, start to teach them the structure in an exciting way. Start to teach them just sportsmanship and rules and responsibilities. And I mean, it's not going to be 100% of the time, but it's
all
a matter
the other of life schools of sports.
Yeah. It's a matter of just making sure that they're beginning to comprehend and understand not just what goes into soccer, but if you put your kid in, like, I don't know, like, what else people kids start to play at a young age, but no matter what they're put into, any organized sport is going to be beneficial to their development in a whole.
This is a person.
Yeah.
Right.
And we always say, like, I'll say this, like, if somebody's actually wondering, like, when is a good time to start one-on-one training specifically, because we do have classes too, but from the one-on-one standpoint, I would say, like, if you're gung-ho about wanting to get better, starting, between 8 and 9 years old, just because everything feels different to the kid at that point, because sure. their bodies are just, they're growing. But when we start with a teenager, they're stuck in their ways and they're not willing to necessarily change it. And, you know, their bodies are not necessarily fully developed, but at the same time, they, things are comfortable. So when things get uncomfortable, they're like, nope. Mm-mm. And our motto is, you always have to get uncomfortable to get comfortable. And you don't have to explain that to a youth athlete, right? Because they're just like, well, this just feels weird. And then
change is easier at a younger age, no doubt.
By the time they get to their teenage years, you don't have to explain to them, like, sorry, you got to get uncomfortable, get comfortable, because they're just, they have those tendencies and those habits already ingrained into their mind-body connection that allows them to carry out their technicalities, their mechanical movement, their tactical awareness, all of that just naturally. So for the sake of us as coaches, start young, but also for the sake of the athlete themselves, it would be ideal to get them involved into any athletic development and then specific skills with whatever sport they're more interested in.
And then I have to imagine frequency, same kind of answer, I'm sure, but you know, and every athlete's different. Where are you looking at for how often to train, not only during any given week, but even like during a year?
I would say, you know, like we always tell people at a minimum, you've got to do it once a week, like from a one-on-one standpoint, because, you know, if we say more further apart than once a week, we're not doing anybody any good, because then the athlete kind of forgets by that point what they're doing. If you can get them touching on, you know, a repetitive tendency over and over and over once a week, you've at least started somewhere. And then from there, how much do you want to do it? If an athlete wants to train 7 days a week, that's fine with us, but we're not gonna kill them 7 days a week. Right. One day is gonna be shooting. And then especially if they're playing games during the week and have additional practices during the week, we're going to say, come into MacRock then and do the sensory station, which is why we've incorporated that, because that's nothing about that's physical. It's all brain training. So that can still keep that can help them focus on keeping their mind sharp while recovering physically. Yep. So how many times, I mean, just as long as you're talking to your athlete and saying, do you want to go? If you don't want to go, then let's make sure we talk and figure out why. Like I said, there's not a cap, but I would say if you're going to get the most bang for your buck, you've got to at least do it once a week.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it too, but also the way you said it, of taking into account the athlete, you know, I always say my one thing to parents always is check in, make sure your kid's still having fun. If they're not, what are we doing?
Yes, right? Exactly.
Well, awesome. Well, I thank you so much for your time, Mackenzie. This was fantastic. Anything we missed?
Honestly, I don't think, I mean, I could talk for hours. So as you,
well, then we'll have to have you back.
Yeah. So at this moment, no, if you have any questions, you can ask me later on, but you know,
and then we'll have links in today's description for MacRock and Mackenzie specifically. And if you have any more questions, we'll put your social media handles on there as well. Yeah. People can reach out to you directly, but otherwise, thank you so much for being on today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mackenzie August of MacRock. I really, really enjoyed the different aspects she had to say. She really touched on a few things that hit home for me, and I'll touch on one of those in a bit here on the Charlie's Cut. But overall, big takeaways in my mind. I love her approach of treating the entire athlete. You know, if you go to her website, I included the links for her today. I have a link to her website and to her Facebook page. Please take the time, go to her webpage, and just go read a little bit about the pillar of her training. It would be really easy to assume, oh, she owns a soccer training facility. I bet you they just work on a ton of skills, but it is so much more than that. I love how she integrates technology. I'm obviously biased on that. That is, quite frankly, how I've set up my entire practice, is utilizing technology in the clinic. But I love how she's utilized technology to keep the kids engaged, but also the mental side of it. In her pillars on her website, she talks about confidence and self-belief. And I cannot agree more of how important that is in today's sports and society. I think just social world of social media and the pressures these kids are under, at times we forget, and these kids start to define themselves as an athlete. And, you know, it really came out in her story as well of you are so much more of an athlete. You are so much more than the sport you play. And I love that that's really the focus of her company. So I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Well, we're nearing the end of today's episode of Players Anatomy. I want to thank you again for listening. If you like what you heard, please hit subscribe, tell a friend. We continue to try to grow our following. Really, more than anything, what I want to hear from all of you is, what do you want to hear? What do you want to know more about? We will continue to find interviews that try to get that I feel people I know or people that we interact with and partner with that have a great story to tell. But at the end of the day, I want to create content that you are craving. So please reach out on our social media platforms. You can find us on at Bell and Health Titletown on any social media platform. Please reach out, leave us a comment, let us know. Tell me what you want to know more about, and I'd love to find somebody to interview, or I'll do the topic myself. And finally, let's take a minute for Charlie's Cut. You know, really reflecting on our interview with Mackenzie, one of the parts that really I want to circle back to that she touched on a couple times. She had more or less decided that she wasn't going to try and play soccer anymore after high school due to doubting how good of a player she was or could be. And this is after receiving multiple offers to play in college. But really the piece I want to touch on, it was two pieces she mentioned because she kind of blew over quick. I circled back to it, but I want to hit it one more time. She mentioned how supportive her parents were with whatever decisions she started to make, that there was no pressure coming from her parents, and that also what truly ended up how she played at the University of Arizona was that her club coach reached out to the coach at University of Arizona and said, you got to get this girl to try and walk on. She's way too talented not to try. So I just want to, there's a couple things here, a lot to unpack there, but a couple things. First of all, here's a gal that clearly is performing well, is succeeding and getting offers. She's starting for her, you know, her high school team. She's starting for her club team. She's getting offers. She's not even asking for their offers. She's getting offers. So this wasn't, she's out hitting the streets, you know, sending video everywhere. And I'm not knocking kids for doing that. I'm just saying she wasn't even doing that. And she still was getting recruited, which speaks to how talented she was. Yet in some shape or form, she lacked some self-confidence and self-belief. And I really think this is why she has made that a pillar in her company, in her programming, in her mission of why she's doing what she's doing with her career and with her life. But the other piece here is the importance of a support group. And she has, the more people you surround yourself with that can be that positive support group with you, the sky's the limit. You know, she talked about how both of her parents were role models for her in that they were business owners and she knew she wanted that. But the fact that, although I am sure they were there pushing her to get better, finding those life lessons that sports can offer, seeing those offers come in and that there was no pressure for her to commit to any of those places and it truly was her decision, says so much about her parents. I'm sure Mackenzie's parents are listening to this. She should be very proud of the young woman she's developed into and what she's doing with her life and bettering the athletes she comes into contact with. But I can't say enough how big of a deal a support group is. And then her club coach. You know, the fact that her club coach called and just advocated for her without her asking him to do that or asking her coach her to do that says so much again about positive people in your corner, people that are just there for you and can be positive influencers for you and are just there for you. They're just truly tried and true support for you is so powerful. I hope, you know, again, I always hope that we reach a broad band of people here. And, you know, when we look at our demographics, who's listening, we've got a kind of a spattering of parents and athletes that listen. And I love that. Athletes, make sure you're thanking your parents for all the support you're getting. Thank your coach for coaching. Thank the refs for showing up and reffing, right? The people that allow you to do what you love, make sure they know that you appreciate them. Parents, you cannot say it enough of just showing your support for your kids and just letting them know you're there and checking in every once in a while, making sure they're still having fun. And then coaches. I mean, this is why we hope people get into coaching, is exactly what Mackenzie's coach did, was advocating for them. Keep believing in your athletes. Keep seeing the bigger picture, that this is more than just about soccer. This is about developing young men and women into people that can be, bring more to society than as they get older, which is exactly what Mackenzie has done with her life. So I can't say it enough. Be supportive, appreciate those that are supporting you, and just leave the better place than the way you found it. Well, thank you again for listening. I am Charlie DeClean, and we'll see you next time on Players Anatomy.